live in Carter Subaru Studios. It is Kyra Nice. Good Wednesday evening to you. My name is Zach Burns. Strolling into the studio so fabulously late, my co-host for the evening. He's also the co-host of the Somebody Somewhere podcast. We've interviewed her a couple times. G and I focuses on the 2001 murder of assistant U.S. district attorney. I should say assassination. Tom Wales, Jody Gottlieb, welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me. Sorry I'm late.
That's quite all right. You're right on time, actually. The song's still playing. So the head tax in Seattle, we've talked about it quite a bit. It's, for whatever reason, I think it's just because the residents of Seattle just hit a boiling point when it comes to new taxes. This has generated more controversy than any other tax levied that I can remember in the not too in actually the quite distant past in Seattle. Seattle is normally A-OK with new taxes. There was a little bit of grousing about the soda tax, but that went through and everyone just kind of adjusted. This one, however, still has people angry. And it's gotten national coverage, a significant amount of national coverage, particularly in conservative media outlets and financial magazines like Forbes.com. We're going to get to the Forbes article that caused a bit of confusion today. But first, here's how national news is reporting on Seattle's, quote, growing problems. This is Fox's John Stossel.
Supporters of big government aren't used to protesters drowning venom.
Can I make an appeal? Can I?
Still, in Seattle, plenty of leftists are ready to march in the name of class warfare.
Pitting workers against workers, against their own class interests.
Amazon's executives, they say, are behaving like mobsters. For stopping construction, they should be prosecuted for extortion.
Shame on Amazon and Jeff Bezos for holding construction jobs hostage in an extortionary threat against the city.
They call Amazon the enemy. Give me a break. Amazon created the jobs that the politicians now want to tax. If a company says tax is too much, we'll leave. That's extortion.
So there you go. That's Fox News's coverage of Amazon's relationship with Seattle. The head tax, of course, you heard the voice of Shama Sawant, who is the face right now of progressive Seattle, especially extreme progressive Seattle. And she deserves to be. I will credit her that, Jody. She's a incredibly effective politician. She has got nearly all the policies that she's wanted through, except for her version this time of the head tax, where she actually wanted it doubled of the original proposal, bringing in $150 million. And she, for the first time, faced a tremendous amount of opposition, both at city council meetings. She's not used to that. And just public addresses. You heard the no head tax chant. That actually happened out on the street. That was a group of construction workers who were on their lunch break, were rallied to come and push back against the head tax. This is right now the controversy happening in Seattle. The city council came up with some numbers based on a report that was put together to flesh out the total cost of quelling the homeless problem here in Seattle. And the number $400 million started being said quite frequently by council members, by other members of the media. And it was all based on this report that was put out to figure out exactly what the dollar amount would be. Today on Forbes.com, there was an article written by Roger Valdez. He is a local activist. We've interacted before. He definitely has his particular view of the city. He wrote a piece today saying that the numbers and the references that were made to this report were based on a report that, in fact, did not exist. At best, a blog post about the report existed, but the report itself was nowhere to be found. So, of course, because there is this anti-city council sentiment happening in the city right now, people jumped on that immediately as fact. And that's kind of the problem when you have so much emotion injected into a debate like this. If you get just a little bit more ammo, you use it. You don't vet it. You don't make sure that this is the absolute truth. And I will say this, the city council responded, as they traditionally do, a bit slow. But that does not excuse the misinformation that was put out today. Jason Rance, my former co-host, he's been doing a really good job. I will commend him on this, on making sure that if he is going to put this Forbes article out there to say that this is what the Forbes article is saying, I'm not actually saying this as truth. And Jason, of course, is someone who has a very anti-city council disposition, but is also very fair. There's a little bit of journalist left in him.
Sure.
And it turns out that the report does indeed exist. It does. Now, there's still, even though Jason's the one that is putting this information, this current information, this factual information out there right now, Lorena Gonzalez in particular is not happy with him whatsoever, thinking that, one, he wrote the initial report, the one that appeared on Forbes, and two, Jason Rantz is anti-city council, so he's going to do whatever it takes to make them look bad. He has no problem making them look bad, but he comes from a place of truth. And the whole day, as I was watching this story unfold, I will say Jason, I believe, treated the city council quite fairly and behaved objectively. I got off the phone with Jason about half an hour ago, and he's reading the report. And the report was in the hands of city council members, the people who voted in the end on the head tax. They did have the full report with these numbers included, the $400 million stat on the report. They had this information. So what happened is Roger Valdez came out and said something that a lot of people wanted to believe, wanted to actually be true, that turned out not to be true. And I'll plug Jason's show. He's actually going to have Roger Valdez on his program tomorrow, airs 6 to 9 a.m. on KTTH 770. And at that point, I think the record is going to be set straight. Valdez does not like the head tax, kind of came up with a piece for Forbes to talk about why this was such a bad, bungled decision, but it was not based on facts. Now we know the truth. Now we know exactly what happened today. It doesn't mean that anybody is instantly now going to become a fan of the Seattle City Council. That is not going to happen whatsoever. We're going to get back to the arguments that we were having, whether or not this head tax is necessary, whether or not the city should be held more accountable for the dollars spent in the past, or prove to us first that they can actually manage a problem before we throw more money at it. But this talking point pretty much dies right now.
Good.
Yeah. Yes.
Good.
So we can get
happy
back
that we can get to the facts.
Get back to and to the real argument. I mean, there still is it still is legitimate to say that we shouldn't be giving city council any money or the city of Seattle any money when they haven't shown in any of their previous budgets that the money allocated toward the homeless problem has been efficient or effectively spent.
Right.
Now let's move on to Michael Rotondo. He is the, you probably saw this headline, the story started really breaking nationally last night. He's the 30-year-old man.
He's the reason I don't date.
He is a full-grown man. By anyone's definition, he is a mature adult, or he should be. He is a person who has matured. He's not mature.
He's 30 years old. I don't know that he's mature.
His parents were so frustrated with him. Because he was living at home, and you know, a lot of people are returning home.
Sure.
And it's tough to buy a house. The housing market isn't great for a lot of people who are leaving college, first entering the job market. But again, he is 30. He is not doing either of these. He does not have a job, and he is not paying any rent whatsoever. So they took him to court and evicted him. He was on CNN with Brooke Baldwin, and this interview was aptly described as a train wreck.
Michael, welcome.
Hi.
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 Hi. So let me start with, you're 30.
Right.
The simplest question, do you not want to find your own place?
No.
Why not?
I don't want to live there anymore.
You don't want to live with your parents?
No.
Feelings mutual.
It's not, it's very tense. It's very awkward.
Of course it's awkward.
We have to, you know, we have to share space, which, you know, may be the case with where I would find myself afterwards, but, I'd prefer to get out.
Okay. So on the preferring to get out, let's rewind for a second, because it's my understanding you've lived, you know, at your parents' house rent free for 8 years. And I know you do your own laundry, you buy your own food. But they asked
all right,
you.
Let me pause there for a second. I mean, it would be humiliating for me if I still, in a parental role, had my mom or dad taking care of those sort of things for me. Like if they were doing my laundry, if they were pouring my cereal, making my eggs, making my bed, I would hope that, and I know this about myself, I have this degree of pride that would completely eviscerate. The interview continues.
5 times, please move out. Why couldn't you guys resolve this without the court?
I would consider much of what they were doing to try to get me out as a tax, and what I was trying to, I was just, trying to preserve, trying to do what's best for me, which is just, let's try to be a little more reasonable. I'll leave. I don't like living here. But I need, I need reasonable time. And as an example of this, the first notice that I received, the February 2nd notice, was basically, you have 14 days before you're outside in the winter weather. So the first thing I did when I got that was I made sure that that wasn't going to happen. I contacted the police department. I said, is this something that's, this could happen? And they're like, no, you just call us. That they can't do that. And I said, all right. And I was like, all right.
He mentioned the relationship being tense and awkward. I imagine it got a lot worse after he called the cops on his parents that had been allowing him to live there rent-free for the past 8 years.
This is insane. At some point, someone needs to grow up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Michael Rotondo needs to grow up.
You know what's frightening about this whole thing? He's actually a father.
Yeah, he has a kid.
So this is a message he's sending to his kid.
Baldwin goes on to ask why Rotondo doesn't have a job.
You tell me you want to move out of your parents' house. Why don't you just move out of your parents' house, like, tomorrow?
I don't have the means to do that tomorrow.
Okay.
So,
do you have a job?
No.
Are you trying to get a job? Because I read that one of the things your parents asked of you, there are jobs available even for those with a poor work history like you. Get one. You have to work. Are you working on that?
I have plans to be able to provide myself with the income I need to support myself, but it's not something that's going to come together tomorrow. So I'm trying to do what's best for me.
Jody, what month is it?
It is May.
It is May. These conversations first started happening back in February, and I know someone like this. And the amazing thing is that some people have this mindset and still scrape by. And I've never really been able to figure that out. Because I know someone who is always talking about getting a job. And it's always it's the ultimate procrastination. Tomorrow, next month, I'll start looking soon. There's never this end date. There's never this actual day that they're going to go and do this. And the way that he's talking about, his plans for getting a job, I guarantee he doesn't have one by the end of the summer.
He's not going to have a job. And he has a sort of level of entitlement and self-righteous indignation that is just insane.
And
God bless his parents.
That's the part about this that really bothers me. I spend a lot of time on this show defending millennials because I think that they get a bad rap. I actually think they're a pretty great generation.
Yep.
And I think a lot, if you think that this country is facing a lot of ills, blaming the millennials is absurd. Absurd to me. Like, they created any sort of the problems. Do they spend a lot of time on their phones? Yeah. So do I. So do people 10 years older than me. So do my parents who are 30 years older than me. Phones are great. That's why people use them so often. Facebook has 1 billion users. Snapchat has a few 100 million users. It's not just the millennials doing this. But because he happens to be within that demographic, that's where Brooke Baldwin decided to take the conversation, that this is typical millennial behavior.
When people speak to the millennials and their general nature as a millennial, they speak to more liberal leanings. In my opinion, do you disagree?
I don't think it's for me to disagree. I think a millennial is a millennial is a millennial based upon the year that you were born.
Okay.
But I think it's totally your opinion to say, that doesn't apply to me. And with that, Michael Rotondo, I appreciate you coming on. I truly wish you the best of luck. And
I am a millennial.
Yes, Michael.
Right.
Okay. I know, full disclosure, I used to work at CNN, and I know Brooke. How she has not lost her mind over this is beyond me.
Because you just have to enjoy the moment, right?
What else are you going to do? Right.
She had to know this interview is going to go viral, that this is going to get picked up. There's sites out there like Mediaite that sort of collect all the great TV moments of the day when it comes to broadcast and cable news. She had to know at that moment, this is definitely going to make it. And not only did it make it, it was the headline story. Because how could you not watch this thing? The thing that angers me about it is that now when people do want to attack millennials as lazy, video game playing, you know, non-starters, self-starters that just live off and leech off mom and dad, they have the most perfect, stereotypical example in Michael Rotondo.
So do you think now with the interviewing process with companies, they'll add a question, do you live in your parents' basement?
Which I don't think you should just be disqualified if you do. But if the follow-up question is, do you have any plans to leave or are you contributing whatsoever? And the answer to that is no, then yes. That and would also, speak to someone's character.
And also, have your parents asked you to leave their house?
Via the courts. Like, not even, hey, son, we know that you were in kind of dire straits in your early 20s. Not uncommon.
That's right.
But that was a long time ago. Like, you've been here almost since George Bush was president. And it's time for you to stop making plans for next week, next month, and figure out a way to get out of here. Because they just want, at this point, you know, they just want to enjoy their lives. And here is this constant reminder of their failure as parents. I'm sure they're fine people, but there's no way. Everybody wants to brag about their child. You know, whatever your kid's doing, you make it 10% better when you tell your friends about it. How do you make Michael Rotondo sparkle?
Is he an only child?
I don't know.
I mean, God bless him.
I know he's an only child still living in the household.
Right, of course.
It must be awful. I could see if I were his parent, because when you go out with, you know, with fellow parents, the topic of your kids always comes up. No matter how old your kids are, oh, Dave's doing great. He's going to make partner this year.
Yep.
You know,
boasting.
Whatever it is.
Yep.
And they have to sit there and hope that no one asks them how Michael is doing. And with the knowledge that once they leave the dinner, that the other couples that they had the dinner with or whatever social occasion it was, are going to be gossiping and talking about their flunky son. That, for me, would be the worst part about it. The humiliation of within my social circle of all my friends, knowing that my 30-year-old son was still living at home and had no intention of leaving, and that I had to get to the point where the courts got involved and he called the cops on me.
That's mean.
Yeah.
That's just cruel.
It's Cairo Nights. G Scott is out from Somebody Somewhere. Jody Gottlieb filling in. More to come. 97.3 Cairo FM. It's Cairo Nights. My name is Zach Burns. G. Scott is off for the week, filling in tonight, tomorrow night, and Friday from the Somebody Somewhere podcast, Jody Gottlieb.
Hey, Zach.
If you haven't checked out the podcast yet, I strongly encourage you to do so. It's one of those. It's a true crime podcast, one of my favorite genres, and it's binge-worthy. It's hard to stop listening.
You're awesome. You've been a good supporter of us, so thank you.
Well, last night, if you were listening to the show around 9:30, you heard last night's fill-in from 710sports.com, Stacey Rost, who covers the Seattle Seahawks primarily. We were talking about the idea that was reportedly being floated around at the NFL owners meeting that there was going to be some sort of punishment attached to players kneeling for the national anthem. And we got it wrong. We thought there was absolutely no way that the NFL was going to implement this as policy. And we're kind of incredulous that it was even being discussed, because it only seems like those who oppose the kneeling are the ones even talking about it anymore. Otherwise, it just had become kind of a dying story. It was first reported by NFL Network's Albert Breer. And again, just as an idea floated, the owners get together and they discuss a whole bunch of different things, rule changes and the like. Then today I wake up and I see that Roger Goodell is trending. Okay. Roger Goodell is trending, and then Anthem is the second trending topic. And I put two and two together and figured out what the league decided to do. This is NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell announcing that players and staff alike need to stand for the national anthem.
Clearly, our objective as a league and to all 32 clubs, which was unanimous, is that we want people to be respectful at the national anthem. We want people to stand. That's all personnel, and make sure that they treat this moment in a respectful fashion. That's something that we think we owe. We've been very sensitive in making sure that we give players choices, but we do believe that moment is an important moment and one that we are going to focus on.
So here's how the new rule breaks down. The team has the choice to stay in the locker room. You don't have to come out for the anthem. But if you choose to come out for the anthem, you must stand. If you do not stand, then the team itself gets fined. Not the player, the team, because this was not part of the last collective bargaining agreement. The team has to pay monies to the league. And then my guess is that the team then can fine the player who decided to take a knee. This has reinvigorated a discussion and a debate that I thought was really dying off.
I know. I'd hope it did die off, actually.
It would, you know, obviously it flared up last year, flared up the year before. Colin Kaepernick has become famous or infamous based on his decision to take a knee. But there were players who said, many players who said, yeah, I took a knee last year. I'm not going to do it this year. I think I got my point across. And Doug Baldwin, who for me is a man beyond reproach, has performed tremendously on the field as a Seattle Seahawk wide receiver, but also has used his platform to promote, in his eyes and my eyes, great social change. He joins 710 Sports' Bob Gross and Tom show and says the NFL continues to ignore the concerns of the players.
You really put your heart out there and say, look, we're trying to do something good for the communities that we represent, that represent us. And it just felt like there was a lack of understanding. And to me, this just further punctuates the tone deafness or the disconnect between the NFL and its players.
Baldwin, and this could not be more true, says people simply don't understand the protests.
They're sitting down, taking the knee, raising a fist, whatever it may be. You're not, like, as individuals watching the game, you're not in any threat. Okay, there's no threat on your life. Okay, So there's no reason for you to get extra emotional in this regard without taking a step back to actually understand why these individuals are taking a knee or sitting down or raising a fist.
And you're never going to convince people that the protests are, or a certain group of people, that the protests are what the players say the protests are about.
Sure,
they're going to see it as disrespecting the flag, disrespecting the anthem, and nothing else beyond that. Those players you can't sway. But there are people, I believe, that did start to listen to the concerns of the players, to what the players were protesting for. And it was primarily the relationship between young black men and police. That's was the genesis of Colin Kaepernick taking a knee. That's why many other players took a knee as well. And I have one particular Twitter user. His handle name is Swole for Nothing. And on a daily basis, will tag me in a tweet that is another example of police abuse against this young black male community. It is a legitimate issue. I don't think there's anyone that would disagree with that. That's what the players are trying to call attention to. And I find it revolting that the NFL would come up with a policy like this that is so, as Doug Baldwin said, tone deaf to the concerns of the players. Meanwhile, you have the NBA breaking records when it comes to viewership, breaking records when it comes to popularity, and the NBA is all about cultivating that relationship between owners and players and the league and players, encouraging its most prominent stars like LeBron James, like Steph Curry, like Kevin Durant, to use this platform to speak out for things that they believe in. They're not suffering the consequences of it whatsoever. The league is on fire. Meanwhile, the NFL owners essentially today turn their backs on the players. And a few of the owners clearly were ruffled by the decision of the league. The New York Jets primarily came out and said today, any fines levied against any of our players We're going to go ahead and take care of that. We're not going to pass those fines on to the players themselves. And the other thing that it's done is once again made this story a story again. This was headline news again today. This NFL controversy that, if you believe certain polls, led to a decrease in viewership. And no one was talking about it. No one was talking about it to the degree that we were a year ago. And now here we are again. And this is the fault of the league and its owners for once again making this front page headline leading news. It's baffling.
It is baffling. The commish.
Goodell is, I mean, no one ever thought that he was truly a guy who cared about the relationship he had with the players.
Yeah.
He's in the bag for the owners.
Yeah, definitely.
Without a doubt. But to me, this was the most egregious, example of him not at all listening to what his players are saying. Baldwin continued, said, the players love this country and that he himself thinks of them as himself as a patriot.
We're not trying to be disrespectful to the country. We're actually saying that, look, this flag stands for liberty and justice for all. That's why I love this flag. I am a patriot. But if I'm going to say that this flag stands for this, then I'm going to make sure that it's accountable to what it says it stands for.
This isn't a flag burning. This isn't someone stomping on the flag or, you know, violating flag code, which, by the way, if you're worried about disrespecting the flag, Sage Rosenfels, an ex-NFL quarterback, now an analyst, tweeted out hilarious pictures of different items of NFL merchandise that completely violate the flag code. I mean, you can buy a Cowboys jersey where the number and the name on the back is the American flag, and it is right there, written in flag code.
People probably don't think twice about that.
No, have no problem with that.
No problem
with that whatsoever. The protest isn't about disrespecting the military, disrespecting the flag, or disrespecting the country. Protests, at their core, are about making the country better. And it's always been infuriating to me that a lot of the people who voted for a guy that said, make America great again, thus denoting that the country currently was not great, which sounds disrespectful, are also very, very upset about a protest that is encouraging America to get better. This is going to lead to the NFL causing a lot more players to kneel who otherwise weren't going to do so. It's Cairo Knights, Zach Burns, Jody Gottlieb, 97.3 Cairo FM. It's Cairo Knights right here on Cairo FM. My name is Zach Burns. G. Scott is out. He'll be back on Monday, filling in from the Somebody Somewhere podcast, Jody Gottlieb. And it's been really strange, Jody, to, I think for the first time, correct me if I'm wrong, 98973, we're seeing commercials on TV for Facebook.
Yeah.
I don't remember them ever advertising on TV before. And the commercials aren't necessarily like, hey, Facebook is fun, join Facebook. Well, I guess the first part is, and then it's more of an apology. Like, you were all enjoying this. You were seeing friends you hadn't seen for a long time. You were connecting with family members. And then you had to deal with fake news, with spam, and then pledging towards the end of the spot that they were going to fix it. They realized that there are problems. They're working to regain your trust. They've gone even further. They've produced a short film now about the company's fight against fake news.
Facebook and other social media sites are being criticized for not doing enough to stop bogus stories that seem to dominate the election cycle.
I mean, the big thing that happened was in the wake of the U.S. presidential election in 2016 is we just were under a massive amount of scrutiny. That's a result of us making mistakes along the way, both in what we built and how we explained what we did, or maybe not explaining enough.
If you think about all of the news that you read in a day, how much of it is objectively false? How much of it is objectively true?
The truth has this unfortunate aspect to it that sometimes it is not aligned with your desires. It is not aligned with what you have invested in, what you would like. And you can see that reflected inside of the content.
There's a lot of content in the gray area. Most of it probably exists in some space where people are presenting the facts as they see them.
People consider misinformation to involve a lot of different things.
We've heard hate speech is misinformation. False news is misinformation. The speech about the government is misinformation. So one of the things we're doing internally is defining what we're really looking at and what we can measure reliably, and then figuring out how do we communicate that in a way that puts it in the right context.
So the company's still in damage control mode.
Oh, yeah. This is PR crisis.
But do they need to be? I know there was a big movement after the Cambridge Analytica scandal came out, where our data was being shared and bought and sold and everything, and people were pledging, and I saw a few of my friends saying, this is my last day on Facebook. Very few of my friends, two of which have since returned, actually.
I'm done.
There was a lot of noise about users bailing, but it didn't seem to ever really come to fruition.
I think a lot of people are still really angry. Yeah.
Then they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Then get over it.
Zuckerberg is on his apology tour. He's in the EU. He is facing his critics, and he's addressing the problem. My problem with the film is it's 11 minutes long. It's propaganda. I mean, it's one thing to deal with a PR crisis and say, we have a problem. We screwed up. We need to move on. We're going to do better. And this is what it looks like. But this feels like a shiny object that they're pushing out there. And it's editorial in nature and feels.
Could a company produce anything but propaganda, though? When you're when they're trying to reassure their customers that their product is okay to use.
Yeah, but I don't. This doesn't say I trust you now. Mm. I don't get that feeling.
I don't trust them. I just don't care because I know my information is out there, and everybody listening, your information is out there as well. It could be bought and sold for $5. That's what it's worth. That's a literal number.
Yep.
Like your personal data out there isn't worth what you think it is. So go back on Facebook. It's Cairo Nights, 97.3 Cairo FM.